My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
And my name is Liv Butterfield, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast, and this is a special episode of this show. Legally, I have to disclose that I'm podcasting with my wife.
Is that even legal?
It's super legal.
Oh, okay.
It's actually illegal when I do it with Kay.
Oh, okay.
We can only broadcast normal episodes of the show in international waters because they allow a podcasting man and woman to podcast without being married. So
Whoa.
Finally, we're
scandalous.
Adhering to the laws.
Yeah. I mean, that makes it a little less exciting for me, but okay.
I have a scoop of international water in a cup outside your room, so it's got a little bit of the danger.
Perfect.
To it. This is a weird episode of the show. Non-derogatory, letting everyone know in case you missed our announcement. Kay moved across country. It'd be weird if you missed that. But because of that, Kay wants to get a little bit ahead on stuff, has been kind of drowning in work. So we decided to take this episode off her plate, and I decided to invite my favorite person in the world onto the podcast. And you'll just throw this out there. It'll be a little bit different in terms of structure and such. It's a good game, I think, to do an odd structured episode, maybe a little bit shorter. If you've listened to the episodes I've had guests with in the past, it's going to be similar to that in terms of level of Zoom and everything. Liv, how you doing, sweetheart?
I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah, having a great day. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I just saw you right before recording.
I know, you're just across the hall.
I know. What a weird situation. You talked to us a little bit, so people who are listening to this only know you third hand through me.
Sure.
Probably. Talk about, you are not new to podcasting or performing generally. Speak to that a little bit.
I'm not. However, I am kind of new to this style of, it's not improv. I don't know what you call it, freestyle podcasting, because the podcasting that I've done previously was all scripted. In 2019-ish, I was involved in a comedic scripted fantasy podcast called Lady Luna's Spice Shop. It is not ongoing, but you can still hear it, where we basically had a script and we followed along. I have a background in musical theater, so I'm used to doing that sort of thing, but it's kind of exciting to be here doing something different.
Yeah. You're asking what we call this. It's not improv. We call this elevated podcasting.
No,
if we did, you should divorce then shoot me, or other way around. You could do it either way. And you're also not new to, you know, we have cultivated an audience who is not going to care about this particular thing, I like to hope, but you're not also new to games or anything. I hate the phrase gamer. You play video games though from time to time.
Yeah.
I would never call you a gamer. I wouldn't have married you if you identified as a gamer, and I had to hide that from you until our wedding night.
I am. Watch out. Yeah, I'm a gamer girl. Yeah, Uh-oh. We exist.
Yeah, I exist.
That's right.
Name two Marios.
Mario and Luigi Mario.
Fine, you won this time. talk about video games a little bit.
Sure. Mostly after being like, yeah, I'm a girl gamer or whatever, I am now going to, as far as quote unquote gamers are concerned, invalidate myself because I love cozy games. Mm-hmm. If there's farming, I want to do it. I don't know if you know this. Of course you know this. In Skyrim, you can start your own little farm. That was the only thing I was interested in that series. I just mm-hmm. want to farm. Even though mostly I play cozy games, I do like puzzle games and RPGs and some platformers. So I'm not limited to just that, but it is what I prefer.
And you, unlike myself, have played through Resident Evil 4 VR.
Yes, it was awesome. It was so fun, and I threw my back out doing it, but it was worth it.
Yeah, it's the thing about, that's the thing of the getting, being a gamer of a certain age, mm-hmm. is you can just do regular gaming or VR gaming and end up hurt.
Well, they keep popping up behind you, so I spent the whole time, like, turning to one side over and over and over again until I finally did it too hard.
Yeah, I remember that. The yes, the memories. One of the high points of our marriage. That makes the marriage sound very bleak. I would say it's one of the lower to lower middle.
Yeah. But,
you had played Katamari as well.
Yes. So my first encounter with Katamari was, it was on a cell phone, like one of my first ever phones, and I could not make heads or tails of it. That in my mind, it was in Japanese, the instructions, but it probably wasn't actually, but it may as well have been because I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to be doing. I couldn't really figure out the controls. All I really knew was that it wasn't Snake, which was what was on my previous phone, which I loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you continue with it there? You had played this one. So we're talking about Wii Heart Katamari. I think I may have forgotten to mention that. I got so distracted by the wifiness of it all. No wifing in the podcast. I defy it. I do wife in the podcast. So this is We Love Katamari, the sequel. You had played this one before or no?
Yeah, I had played this one. Some friends and I rented a cabin around... To me, it was around when the Switch 1 first came out, but it might have been somewhat after that. And so they brought their Switch, and we played Mario Party, and we played this. And I was charmed and delighted by it. We had so much fun. And then when I eventually got my own Switch, I got the game for myself, because it's just a really fun, weird time.
It is. It's a great series, and it's one that we have, for being singular and really special to my heart. It's something that, this is only the second time we've ever talked about it on this show. For people listening, we covered the first game way back in 2015, episode 101. So that feels like a million years ago, infinity ago. And it is. We're different people. The world is so different 11 years ago. So we're finally getting back to the sequel. Here. And we've got some kind of stuff here in the notes that is some prepping information. Feel free to interrupt me at any point. We don't need to read these notes or anything like that, but there's some stuff that's worth knowing, especially if you're listening to this and you don't know Katamari, which does feel crazy to me that somebody would listen to this and just have no idea. But also, what do I know?
If you don't know it, you should go play it. It's really, really fun. It's like... easy to pick up, but difficult to master.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that anyone would probably have a good time doing it.
It's really special. I don't think there's anything quite like it, including other games made by the same guy who tried it. Katamari Damacy, or Damacy, depending on how much you want to pronounce it, translates to Soul of the Clump or Clump Spirit. Not the sequel to Christmas with the Clumps, where the Clump Father, the Clump Son, and the Clump Holy Ghost visited the Clumps. Is a 2004 PS2 game, and it's a game that's hard to describe. We're going to talk about describing it, which I think is one of the fun challenges of Katamari. It's basically you roll things up into a ball, developed by Namco, but the figurehead of this, directed and created by Kaide Takahashi. And Takahashi comes from an art background. primarily. And I think this shows a lot in the game. He does not come off as a game programmer. He was a visual artist and conceptual artist. It is a visual and auditory art experience as much of as a game, I think.
Everything, it's fantastic to look at. The music is great. The sound effects are
really
amazing.
Good.
Amazing. Every single thing you roll up makes a different sound, and it's so fun.
And they're all earworms. Like, even sometimes with the sound effects. We've been walking around the house doing sound effects of being rolled up since we were both playing this. And the sound effects are great. Like, like, I love the dib, dib, dib. It happens.
So when you roll up the, I think it's the schoolgirls maybe, and they go, "Ah, oh, well, who are you?"
Yeah, who are you? It's a horrible little critter with like a giant, I don't know, like a gobstopper, an everlasting gobstopper that it's pushing around.
Yeah, they never tell you what it is. They're just, in their culture, why would you? Like, no, they all know it's a Katamari.
It's self-explanatory. Yeah. Their culture of one man, one woman, a son, and then a thousand, like, sisters' kids.
They never mention the brothers or sisters or whatever. Where do all those cousins come from?
I don't know. Like, they butt off of the prince, or they're actually children, but they're keeping it from the prince. I don't know if you have to read the manga for that.
I don't know. They were really excited when the prince was born.
That is true.
And then they treat him so poorly.
That, you know what? Many such cases. As a firstborn son, many such cases. Takahashi was specifically very inspired by an unreleased game called Densen. This was a game about a girl who floated from home to home via power lines. And from this, he kind of took this idea of mundane spaces being recontextualized. And then there's a Japanese school game called, it's great to do an episode without K because K's pronunciation is so much better than mine at everything. But Tamagorogashi, which is you roll a gigantic ball into a goal. So it sounds like some kind of super soccer.
Rolling.
Yeah, and that's where he's like, rolling in power lines. He's like, okay, well, I want to use regular spaces, and I want to roll a big ball, and what if you rolled this thing up and it got bigger here?
And genius. Super
genius. Like, it feels like it came with the universe. There are four kind of key elements set out to make, you know, with this. Novelty, ease of understanding, enjoyment, and humor. Enjoyment's very funny. Like, I set out my game to be, you know, and you can make a game that's not strictly enjoyable, but it's like advertising your burger as having flavor.
Yeah, taste.
Yeah, taste, biteability. Mm-hmm. This burger has good bread containment. But if you played it, this makes a lot of sense. It sounds self-explanatory, but no, this is novel, easy to understand, enjoyable, and humorous. Just obviously, inherently.
Yeah.
The sequel came out the next year after Katamari Damacy, which was a real secret success. I told this in the first episode, but it's been 11 years. Me and my ex-wife, your natural enemy, who you will hunt down and kill.
This is a heck of a time to tell me that's what's happening, but all right, I guess.
There's a lot of stuff. I figured I'd multitask. I didn't want to waste time telling you and doing a podcast. I figured it'd be easiest to do them at the same time.
Fair. And now it's on the record, so.
Yeah. It's a no. My ex-wife's fine. I heard good reviews of this and saw it in a store, and it was a budget game. This was $20 or $30 when games were $40 or $50, and got it and basically played it in one night. I just sat down and chugged it because we were both just like really enamored with it. And they did not expect it to be such a huge hit. And Takahashi was like, no, I don't want to do a sequel. The games industry focuses on sequels, and that is detrimental to employee creativity. With, like, they had flash forward to 10 years of Twitter discourse of this stuff. There are two minds of this. It's interesting because he's like undeniably right. Annualized sequels and such do kind of quash art. Also, nothing else Takahashi has done I've liked. Have you fucked around with any of his other games, like a Nobi Nobi Boy or anything like that?
No. What is that?
It's interesting. You mentioned Snake earlier. You're some kind of little worm critter guy, and you kind of groove around. It's less directed than Katamari. similar art style. Like, basically nobody liked it. And then he had one that came out recently that came and went like almost instantly. Nobody really talked about it. They got pretty mixed reviews. So it's like interesting. This guy did this one thing that absolutely struck cultural lightning, and then struck lightning, struck cultural gold, and then like lightning, and then basically went on to follow his muse, and people weren't buying as much.
That'll happen sometimes. Occasionally, yeah, people just have one like stellar beloved project in them, and nothing else hits the same.
The one part of them that is universal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he didn't want to do a sequel there. But I don't like that Namco said, "Listen, we're doing a sequel. Do you want to be on it? You can control it. If you don't want to be on it, we're just going to do it anyway, and we're just going to get somebody else to do it." So he's like, "Okay, fine, I'll do it." And as part of the conditions for doing it, he made it really meta. We Love Katamari. The story, which we're going to talk about later, is about how popular Katamari is.
Mm-hmm.
It has a bigger budget, a little bit larger in scale. It's basically more of the same and has a more in-depth story to it, which is a funny way to take it, because this is not a very story-based game, I would say. Big innovation in this is co-op mode. I did not play it this time around, but I did it in the original version. It's super weird. If you were going to guess how a co-op mode of Katamari would go, how would you guess it would go?
I would guess that we would, I don't know how you do a co-op. A, like, versus makes sense to me.
There is a versus, and the versus does work how you think it would.
Uh-huh.
If I were going to do a co-op mode, it would be like a, you're on the same team trying to clear an area, perhaps.
Yeah, like, let's get everything in here.
And instead they do, I don't know if this was the case, this might be showing my age, but when you were in Driver's Ed, did they have the cars where it had a second set of brakes and gas and steering for the driving instructor?
Oh, I didn't take Driver's Ed. My dad just stuck me in the car and was like, good luck. So
swim. we had Driver's Ed, and they had these special cars that you would take, and the Driver's Ed teacher could like pump the brakes on you literally.
Oh,
you
know, that's so funny.
Crash. It's kind of like that. You have two people steering the Katamari. So it ends up being a game about like communicating with the person next to you on the couch more than intuiting it.
Huh.
It's real weird. It feels very kind of, again, kind of ahead of its time in terms of the kind of, you know, non-derogatory, affectionate bullshit you see in like Ludum Dare experiments, experimental game jams, and like Indie Gate Day of the Devs and shit like that.
Hmm.
They ended up making a bunch more sequels, but this is the last one he did. He said, fine, do them without us. And they did. And we got to talk about what it is to play this game, because what kind of game it is, I think, is an interesting question here. Last little bit I want to throw in here, just as a note, though, is my friend Laura Hall, my boss when I worked at the Escape Room, wrote a book on Katamari, released by Boss Fight Books. Go check that out. Laura's great. It's a cool book. Interviews, all kinds of like that, you know, details and stuff like that. It primarily focuses on the first game, but it is a good window into Takahashi. So go support my friend Laura.
Neat.
So what kind of game is Katamari? Without looking at notes or without thinking about it, what would be your like instinctual answer to this?
It's definitely some kind of puzzle, but it's not a traditional puzzle. And it's almost like a racing type game, because there's almost always a time limit, but it's also not a racing game.
No, like it does have a time trial kind of element to it. Like, yeah, you're trying to do the best you can within a time limit. Like, you have as much time, you have this much time. How can you meet this goal? And then can you exceed the goal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seemed, when you look at it, like, I feel like this game looks like, asking what type of game it is a stupid question, you know, but I think it's actually not that stupid, because I think it's a little weird.
Like, it's a Katamari game. Like, it's its own thing.
Very singular. You know, it would be, so it's like, I think of it as a action puzzle game, more or less. You know, some things in common with something like, say, like a Pac-Man, with different concerns, rather than, you know, actual fail states, the fail state is the timer, like a non-aggressive Pac-Man. If you've never played it, you are a little guy, you have a time limit, and you have a goal. The goal can either be a size or a number, sometimes it's something else, and you push this ball around, and when the ball touches something smaller than it, it sticks to it and eventually incorporates, like gets absorbed into it to make the hole bigger. As the ball gets bigger, you can roll up bigger things. So an interesting thing I was thinking about in terms of level design with Katamari this playthrough, I really wanted to think about how these levels are designed, because like to think I've gotten smarter in the last 11 years, is that, like, if you were going to make a perfect game of Katamari, it would just be a line of every object from small to large, right? Like, you could take these levels and defragment them into a volume bar that just went up.
Yeah, I was trying to think a little bit about level design since I knew I'd have to come talk about it. And I thought the first few levels that I played, it was really frustrating to see something that you thought was going to be roll-upable, and then you just bounce off it and you don't pick it up. But I realized as I was going along, most of the things are kind of arranged in a path. So if you hit something that's too big, especially when they do the one where they stagger it of like two things next to each other and you can pick up one but not the other one next to it, that's kind of the game saying you're not big enough to go down this pathway. Go back and pick up some other things or start over and make sure you're big enough to pick up these things at this point.
It'll kind of shunt you onto a different path.
Yeah.
You know, there are definitely lines in kind of a similar way to like a Tony Hawk game. Like Tony Hawk levels will sit down and make combo lines for you. This will make little lines of ascending objects for you. The other thing that you said in there that I wanted to hone in on, though, that's interesting, is that I think that this game, being good about this, you know, you need to be able to be good at moving your guy around, and you have visual acuity to kind of sight read and look at comparative sizings of things, but they're not always, they can be kind of jank.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there are known factors. So like if something's alive or animate, it is harder to roll up. And that makes sense. You know, we try to take the cats to the vet, they're animate as shit, and it's harder to roll them up into the thing. You know, if they weren't adamant, we could just take them to the vet. We could mail them there.
Yeah, of course.
But it's also a thing where you can run into something, it is definitively smaller than me, but maybe by volume or weight or whatever internal calculation the game has, it's not. So you bounce off, and sometimes you will bounce off and get stuck between something and start losing parts of your Katamari. And shrinking a little bit. And that is a bummer. One of the things I think that makes this game work is that if this were too tightly controllable, like if this were too masterable and too exact, it would lose a lot of its casual appeal. I think that some of this kind of like jankiness and bouncing off encourages you to play this lighter.
Yeah. Another thing that it'll do sometimes is pick up something that's strangely shaped.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then you don't roll in a perfect ball and you'll go over something that you should be able to pick up. And you don't, because now like your Katamari picks up at one point, like it's on a little spindle.
Yeah, it changes your physics.
Yeah.
So like even in individual objects, there's kind of a risk reward. And one of the interesting things about those, like, you know, sticks, basically, or like fence posts, shit like that, is that they tend to be pretty big, you know?
Yeah.
They tend to contribute well to your Katamari, but they're going to fuck up your rolling until you can get kind of rounded out. Mm-hmm. There's these little micro risk reward decisions you're making. I found that I was never thinking about that while playing, though. One of the things about this game is that it's kind of surprisingly hard. You know, not hard like, you know, it's like Dark Souls, you know, it's not like, oh, there's like Millennia times 10 hard. But like this, it's, you know, some of the time limits are kind of tight. Sometimes, you know, I failed a couple times in this. It's not a trivial game.
Yeah.
So like you don't have that much time to sit down and be like, okay, do I want to go left or right? You operate a lot in this game on instinct.
It's a real, like, The levels that were most difficult for me, I don't have always fantastic hand-eye coordination, and I tend to panic. So I'd be like turning around and not knowing where I was. And also I don't have a great sense of direction. So then I would get lost and the timer would start to count down and I'd just like be running around in a circle. I think it really instills a sense of urgency.
Especially during that like last minute. You mm-hmm. know, when the king or last 30 seconds when the alarm starts going off. It makes you, it's doing that on purpose to make you start feeling what in other times of playing this can be really zen.
The level where you have to look for a cow or a bear mm-hmm. is, I think, the opposite of most of these other levels, because that one you have to go really slowly and like look at everything and think, could this be considered a cow?
Yeah.
What instead of just like rolling down a hill with abandon, you have to watch everything you do and go super slow. But normally you're just like faster, quicker, more things.
What a fun question the video games get us to ask. Like the idea of can this be considered a cow? Ordinarily, the answer to that for most things in my life is no.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, there are those edge cases. It's just rarer than it is outside of that level in Katamari.
Yeah. And if the king says it's a cow, it's a cow.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no arguing with it. This creamer dish is cow, mm-hmm. I suppose. You know. So you have this kind of combination of things where you're playing instinctively. You can't really phone it in, though. It's not like a casual game like a Flower or something like that where it's just made to vibe. You are kind of turning off your brain at a point, unless you run into one of these challenge points like this, you're really struggling. It's interesting. It does not have like a smooth difficulty curve. It feels like as you're playing, instead of the game just getting harder, you just have levels that pop out of, for me, this is just at least my experience, mm-hmm. where levels would kind of pop out of nowhere that were reminding me like, oh, you need to think more.
Yeah.
Wake up a little bit.
I found that I got significantly better at it as time went by because it does sort of impart an understanding of what it wants from you.
Yeah. And it's also, there's a repetition built into the level kind of arc mm-hmm. where you will do levels that are basically takes on other levels. There are a lot of levels that just build on the previous one mm-hmm. where you, before they start mixing things up, where you can literally just, you know, do the same thing you did last time plus more.
Yeah.
And this thing that I was thinking about with this is that this game, one of the things that they wanted was this to have accessibility and kind of pick up and play stuff. When I think of like a pick up and play game, you know, an example I think of a lot is Pac-Man. I feel like Pac-Man's mm-hmm. very easy to understand. Run away and eat.
Yeah.
You know, is basically just my childhood. How does this compare though? Like if you put yourself in the mind of somebody who is not fluent in video games, how does this land if you're sitting down somebody in front of a Pac-Man versus a Katamari, or putting somebody down in front of a Tetris versus a Katamari in terms of ease of understanding?
Interesting. I'm going to be honest and say probably not well, based mostly on my experience with the mobile game, the phone game that was like...
We Touch Katamari, I think, is maybe the name of that.
I don't know. It was in like the early to mid 2000s. It was on a flip phone. And I just, it might have said like roll up objects. And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah. It's weird, right? Like, yeah. It also, because the first game was such a big hit, there is kind of an assumed player base, I feel like they had, where. Mm-hmm. They knew that people loved this thing that was very singular. The fans wanted more of it. Time told with all of the sequels. Like, I played basically all of the Katamari games. I like this series. They're not that different. Really do get a lot of the same stuff. Like, there weren't a lot of wide places to take this. You know, and it's interesting thinking, comparing it with other pick-up-and-play kind of games. If you look at a Tetris or a Pac-Man or, like, a Centipede or something like that, when they had to expand those franchises, they did it by switching them into different genres. Hmm. Like there's a Pac-Man platformer, there's a Pac-Man battle royale, there's stuff like that. You know, there's a Pac-Man 3D platformer with a story and stuff like that. They never did that with Katamari. Katamari never became like decorate my house Katamari style on the phone, or like the Katamari, you know, the prince goes and jumps, you know, through the kingdom or whatever. They just more Katamari.
It's kind of strange in a way because they introduce all those cousins, and so they have a bunch of characters, and they could like put us on whatever planet or wherever they come from and give us a story about it, but they don't.
There's a surprising amount of story within these games, but they never expand it to make more sense or to be more traditional.
Well, and the story we get in this game is all in cutscenes. It's not actually a part of the game. They're just like, hey, let me tell you a little story, and they don't go along with anything you're actually doing.
No, they're just beautiful little like plays.
Yeah, like little 1 minute short films.
The other question I was thinking about, these are just kind of thought things for us to talk about, but also for people listening, things that occurred to me as putting together notes, is that what is Katamari without this set of aesthetics, like without its graphics and charm and music? This is a gameplay mode. Does it work even like a little bit? There are a couple of games I can think of that are Katamari likes. Specifically, I think the biggest one is called Donut County. Did you ever play Donut County?
No.
It's cute. It's good. There's also one called Hole.io that is basically the same thing. And instead of rolling a ball around, you control a hole.
Yeah.
Around the city.
And then you get like bigger and bigger.
Yeah. And it's fun.
It's fine. Yeah. But it's no Katamari.
It's no Katamari. It's not nearly as weird. And it's the only like thing that I can think of that just straight up decided to be a Katamari. Like, really strange for the mid-2000s when something kind of hit pay dirt. Like, you got tons of clones of these things. Like, when, for example, there's a Baldur's Gate spinoff called Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. There were just tons of Dark Alliance likes once that came out. That kind of action RPG specifically, people made a bunch of them. There were only a couple of Katamari likes. Is that because this gameplay mode does not work without these aesthetics and music and visuals and stuff? Or is it because no one's cracked that code? Like, there is a way to make this gameplay mode inherently fun, and it can be flexible as to take on any suit of theming.
It's interesting because they do have the challenge levels that kind of feel like they have a slightly different theming. Like, it's not just roll up, you know, objects. Like, they're, you know, roll up things till you stay on fire, roll up clouds.
When I say theming, but I mean like a different like aesthetic sense. So like imagine like,
can you just do that though? Like, this is me not knowing a lot about the game industry. Like, I know they made a bunch of, say, those Baldur's Gate sequel clones, but that's like a type of game. Have they like patented the roll up? Is that what's happened?
The Fruit Roll Up Company has so many things to offer or to pay for. I don't know if there's specifically a copyright on that. I know you can't copyright a game genre. You know, it's fairly loose what you can and cannot, or not loose, it's rather tight what you can do and not do with that. Like, there are a lot of games that are blatant ripoffs of other games. It wouldn't necessarily be somebody pushing it. Like, maybe you control the ball, you know, as opposed to that. It might have a different control scheme. But I can imagine, like, a version of this. The thing I was kind of surprised if there were going to be more knockoffs of this that I would have seen would have been, like, a dark take on this, where you are a consuming maw or a void or what have you. Like, you're the nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind the nothing. You know, I don't mind a little sweet nothing. I would take that. It never happened, though, as far as I can tell. We just kind of got Hole.io and Donut County. So it makes me wonder if I can imagine it, but I wonder if there's no market for that. So much of the fandom, the people who like this game, I'm not sure if they're thinking about the mechanics of this.
No.
I think that they're mostly just a fan of the little guys and the music and everything. And when I say people, I mean myself too. Mm-hmm, like, I like the mechanics of this, but also all that stuff is great. I can't blame anybody.
I also don't know if there feels like a need for it. One of the nice things about this game is even at the end, you can keep playing it and just try to get bigger or faster or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why you would go spend your time on a lesser version when you can just keep doing this, which is already perfect.
It's also a thing, too, where they never saturated it. The first one came out, they then put out a sequel in a year, and then it was a long time before they put out another one, and a long time before they put out another one. And when they were putting out other ones, a lot of times they're on different systems. So, like, the next one I played after this, the Xbox 360 one and the phone one I played eventually, but the next one I think I played was the PSP one. And that was the novelty was the system it was on. It wasn't that different of a game. You're just playing it on the PSP, you know? And until last year, or maybe it was early this year, I'm bad with numbers, they put out their most recent entry in the series that has like a time travel gimmick and kind of
cliffhanger. Oh, yeah.
And they introduce power-ups. Like it's 20 years into the franchise, and like, oh, what if you could move a little faster for a little bit?
Did like that make any like noticeable difference to you? Like, did you enjoy having that, or was that just the everything has to be more complicated now?
That's actually really good. The thing I don't like about this is here's a little tight miniature waff on the on the new Katamari, which, you know, BNK or KBOT 2000 or whatever exists in 10 years we'll cover is that the power-ups are fun. They're placed really sparingly, so they're kind of placed where you're supposed to use them. Which is a kind of a video game pet peeve of mine. And then the other thing is they've added a heavy collectathon nature. So in these games, there are things you can get while you're rolling things up. You can get presents, which are cosmetics, and cousins, which are skins. For this, in those games, you also get like crowns that function as stars, and you need to get a certain number of crowns to unlock a new set of levels or unlock levels, similar to modern Mario games. I'm not crazy about that. Like I play these games like a Tony Hawk or Guitar Hero. I just want to accomplish the goal. I don't care if I do high scores or get everything. That's not my thing. So this is a little exercise for listeners. Think about like what would a Katamari be like without this? And maybe if you can think of other Katamari likes that I'm not thinking of, let me know. Maybe somebody's done like the Demon Katamari, which sounds cool to me.
Yeah, that could be fun. Although like the design is so cheerful and colorful and cute, but you are, you know, rolling up humans and then eventually like whole cities and you roll up the buildings and everyone inside goes, ah!
It's an Eldritch monster. It's a Lovecraftian game. And the game, the way it's the story, like we'll talk about the story in a bit, but the way it plays with that is really interesting where like, it's so clearly on screen something nobody likes, but the plot of the story is no, everyone likes this.
Yeah.
Like it kind of gaslights you. Earth sent representatives to be like, King, do this to us. And then the king comes and does it to every human as if that person represented the will of humanity.
As far as the king is concerned, they do.
Yeah, because we're ants.
Yeah.
Why would he care? Like if an ant came up to me, okay, an ant came up to you, love, and is like, hey, the other day when you stepped on my ant colony, that was awesome. Please come and do that again.
Sure.
Like, right? Like you wouldn't think whether that ant had, you know, the mandate of ants. Mm-hmm. What is this, a mandate of ants? You would think like, oh, okay. Ant wants me to kill ants.
It's telling me I'm doing it.
Yeah. I think I'd be like, all right, that ant spoke. That must be what the ants want. Mm-hmm. I think the game is doing something really clever with that. The police trying to stop you, everyone screaming and running away from you. And then somebody comes up and goes, hey, no, that was actually really great when you did that.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, for the most part, they go, that wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, they want you to kill all of the, not kill.
Everyone. I mean, roll everyone up.
Yeah, you do it. And, you know, who knows what happens to them? They turn into stars, Carl Sagan style. But the person who sold out humanity is disappointed with what happened. In this essay, I will. we'll talk about those aesthetics a little bit because this is all over the place because I did the notes. Kay's better at doing that kind of thing than I am. But we'll do aesthetics here because this is the huge, big selling point of the game. If you're listening to this and you're not Katamari familiar, you probably know what it looks like because it's big. You've seen it around. But if you're a fan, you understand why this is important. Because it is that beautiful combination of like weird and also just aesthetically nice. Like it's cute, it's comforting. We have very blocky polygon shapes, tons of very mundane objects in big kind of blocky representations arranged somewhat randomly. And everything looks like this surreal like mess. I have in the notes as a messy surrealist stuffscape, which is what these levels look like to me.
Just everything everywhere in a way that it wouldn't possibly be unless you needed to roll all the stuff up.
Yes. You know, everything has fallen down onto things. And this is, you know, the people on Earth and the objects, and then our protagonists, the royal family we have, are portrayed in different levels of fidelity in a way that I think is useful, where the characters we control are just little sets of polygons, like the prince is a set of little shapes and stuff. And then you get the almost like grotesquely detailed and high-res king.
He is so, like, beautifully hand-drawn.
Yes. He looks like a meme image before there were meme images. Like, he looks like the Chin Chad. Do you know the Chin Chad?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what the thing's called. But
yeah, he's got, like, a chin and, like, abs. He's got his shirt, like, open to reveal his abs, and he's, like, lounging.
He's very strong and weirdly sexy.
Yeah.
Like, sexualized King Katamari, 100% a thing. Surprised that I have not, like, I don't look up porn of things online that aren't humans from time to time. I'm surprised I haven't had Katamari porn inflicted upon me.
That's fair. You know? They do have, like, at one point he's got, like, his foot out with, like, a big old anklet on it. Like, that seems weirdly aggressive. Like, huh.
Yeah. There is a worship my foot little human as I roll you up into a ball and, like, toss you into space without even thinking about you. There's something there.
The little guys go and sit on his shoulder, and he's still beautifully rendered.
Yeah.
And the little humans are still like tiny little
garbage
polygons
monsters.
Without a face.
Little Star Fox enemies, you know, the little Star Foxes that like, and then, and he's the only thing that exists like almost in another dimension.
Yeah.
Of greatness and stuff. Did you pick up during this, one of the things I love about this this game is that sometimes as you're rolling around, there'll be little arrangements that kind of tell almost little stories. So like an example, you know, so the simplest example would be like somebody is driving like a cart of cabbages or whatever, and they spill down a hill. And then there's one like pretty far down the hill. It rolled further. It's not really a story. It's just kind of giving you a world to live in. But other times there'll be cute things like, you know, there'll be like a dog catcher being chased by a dog, you know, shit like that. Like you'll find little like people getting out of their gourd, getting out of their depths, and like little just kind of tableaus of things throughout this.
There's a wedding that you roll up at one point, only it's several bride
Kill Bill
and grooms
3.
Because everything is like repeating over and over again.
Yeah, I love that. Like just it's a big group wedding. It's a it's a cult wedding.
It's a Mormon wedding.
Rolling up all these Mormons. Like, whenever you get the first Mormon, the level ends. And you can never tell because they look like everybody else. But, like, it's... The drawings are... Or these little stories are great. They're funny. The drawings themselves are funny. The characters look funny. I love Katamari animals. Like, even something as simple as, like, a snail or a bear or something like that is a funny drawing.
They also, when you roll them up, their legs like keep going, which is
kind of a
delightful.
Flailing, way. Again, showing evidence of the ludonarrative dissonance of they don't in fact like this.
They don't
in
like
this essay,
it.
I will. And the soundtrack, you can't fuck with this soundtrack. I think that like the main Katamari theme, I would make the argument this is a top 10 like ever video game theme up with like Tetris and Mario, like Sonic and stuff.
Oh, for sure.
This original soundtrack of these games and all of them, not just the best games, even the games that are not super great, even if they reuse tracks, have incredible fucking soundtracks.
The song, I think it's Everlasting Love. It's the one that they play on the racetrack levels. And it sounds just, if you were like, yeah, this is a girl group from Japan doing like a 60s beach summer song, I'd be like, yeah, of course that's what it is. Like it sounds like a real song.
It functions as music, you know, and they, you know, they will do that from time to time. They did it in the first one as well, but I think this one has a couple more crossover songs in it. This is a specific kind of music. This is called Shibuya Kai, which is Japanese city pop. City pop has shown up in a couple different video games before, which is Japanese music, you know, that kind of is inspired by Western music of the 60s. When I say Western, I don't mean Sergio Leone. I mean like Burt Bacharach, like kind of pop.
Yeah, definitely. Like you can 100% hear that.
Yeah,
it.
It's really good. It's the game I did not like, Paradise Killer, has a soundtrack that is also city pop that's really good. Or you look at like Mega Man Legends, another game I didn't like that much, but has elements of city pop in the soundtrack. City pop good.
Great.
As a thing. it's good. It's great. They're also catchy. It is, for me, it is hard to say which soundtrack is better from the first or second one. I think you have a strong preference for the second one.
I really love the second one. It's very, very good.
What are some standout, tracks for you?
So I
put some of mine in the notes, but
that we have almost exactly the same. Like, I love Everlasting Love, that Katamari on the Swing. I've been humming it around the house for weeks now.
Yeah. Katamari on the Swing, I love, cause there's a que sera sera in the first one. Anytime a Japanese guy is doing like a 50, like an old white guy lounge singer voice.
Yeah.
It's so good. Katamari on the Swing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fucking, I love it as a vibe.
And then they're like backing it up. Mm-hmm. Baby Universe is also great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really liked the Katamari Holiday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Katamari Holiday is really nice.
That one's really good. But they're all really great. Oh, and I don't think it's on the soundtrack, but the music that plays when you talk to the king.
Yeah, the first like, or second time.
That one, I love that.
That one's really good. And I like the music when you talk to the king once you've completed a level as well.
Mm-hmm.
That little bit.
Yeah.
That's really
it's
nice.
It's so good.
Yeah. Wall-to-wall bangers. It's even when they're not songs that I would listen to on their own, which most of them are, they've never bothered me.
Mm-mm.
I've never been like, oh, I have to turn this off. They do a funny trick in this game. This is the re-release. We talked about, we're talking about We Love Katamari, but we both played We Love Katamari plus Royal Reverie, which we'll talk about for this, is they have a feature where you can edit the soundtrack, but you have to unlock each song first.
Yeah.
So they're going to make you listen to it once. Like, if you just want to say like, listen, I love Baby Universe, I just want to listen to Baby Universe over and over, you can't. You have to go through and unlock all of them and mm-hmm. make sure that's all you want to listen to.
Yeah.
And then you can edit them down.
I noticed that it had that song selection feature on there, but I never bothered with it because all the songs are great.
Yeah. Even the ones they're my all-time favorite, I'm still going to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to hear. So talking about kind of level design and individual levels. Mm-hmm. In this, one of the things about level design, we talked about this a little bit earlier. One of the things I noticed a lot this time around is you need to be able to account for a player getting to an intended area too early.
Mm-hmm.
So a level cannot just be there are small things where you start, not only because you start in a random place in the level, but not random, there are set spawns, but you don't spawn in the same place every time you start a level. And then just have bigger things around that. You have to have mixed things everywhere, because if you roll too far, the game does not want to completely fuck you over and make you go back to the beginning to get small things.
Mm-hmm.
You there can be like a preponderance, like things are generally bigger here, but there will be small and big things in every area. There is an optimal route, but it wants to be a little bit looser with that. It wants you to be able to improv a little bit and not have to play optimally to win.
Yeah.
Through this. Have you ever watched a Katamari speedrun before?
I haven't. That sounds fascinating.
They're interesting. I watched a couple of them to prep for this. One of the things is that you can leave a level whenever you want, and as long as you've hit the minimum, you can beat the level. So people will roll up things until they get the bare minimum of what they need to pass the level, and then immediately quit out. So it's a lot quicker than maybe you think. And the other thing is they use the dash move a lot, which I find very awkward to use when I'm playing.
It's hard to initiate that move.
Yes. It's purposely awkward.
Like, then I just stand there like a lump in front of a wall for what feels like a million years.
The soul of the lump.
Maybe I'll eventually activate it, but maybe I won't.
It's a lot harder, I found, on Switch than it is because of the staggered dual sticks on a PlayStation controller. They're right next to each other. I think it's a little bit easier.
That makes sense.
Katamari, We Love Katamari. One of the big upgrades it did from the first one is having a wider array of environments. They're not all my favorite, but they have a bunch of new things you can do. Most levels take place in a world at different scales. So like you're either in a room, then you go outside into the neighborhood, then you expand to the city, eventually you go out into the world and continents and stuff. A lot of these levels are the same. They just start you in different places and let you go from a certain height.
I thought it was really cute that all of the ones where you're specifically, the goal is to get bigger, like be bigger within a certain amount of time. Like that's all the same city, just like you said, like you start in the room for the first one and then you keep getting bigger and then it is the same city and you can be like, oh, I remember when I was small and I rolled up just this little park area.
You can eventually go back and roll up the entire building
that you started in the first one,
which is really fun. It's really smart too, from like a conserving resources, you know, perspective. Like when you play these levels, they're not always the same. They'll rearrange the objects and you'll start in a different place. But doing the basic geometry of the city being the same and reusing it at different scales, you know, this is has always been not like a huge budget game. This isn't like a, you know, a God of War or whatever. They're able to kind of save money there in a way that is invisible to the player and is actually additive. And then we have some other levels that typically go with special stages. We go to like a zoo. There's a classroom that doesn't seem to be in the city. There's a lake, like an underwater stage. Sky, there's a racetrack, which I really love. And these tend to go with these special levels, which I have listed here to kind of talk about highlights and lowlights. What these are. I have the concept of these oftentimes written here to remind us, but and we don't have to hit all of these in order. Just kind of favorites and lowlights to this. Looking at this list of these, what are some favorites and least favorites?
So my favorite levels, I of course loved the final big level where you start out at like mid-sized and you can almost immediately roll up people and then you start rolling up cars and houses and eventually like world monuments. You crush the White House and like the Golden Gate Bridge. You just suck them all right up into your giant Katamari and it's so satisfying.
It's really, really fun to see these abstracted representations of other countries. Like you have this kind of this neighborhood in Japan that is one-to-one and then eventually you get to Egypt and like what's Egypt, like three pyramids and a Sphinx. That's what that entire country is. But it works because you're at that big of a scale. Like it turns into kind of Carmen Sandiego-ing it through this. That is always a highlight. They traditionally end every game with something like that and it's always a blast.
It's great. It's so good. And then you like roll up a bunch of whales and then there are giants all of a sudden that you can roll Kaiju. Up eventually. Yeah.
Ultramans. That one's really good. I love that level. I love the racetrack, which we talked about as a level. This one, you can't stop your Katamari.
That's and so fun.
The level is roughly oval shaped. This plays Baby or Everlasting Love, I think. So it plays over this. And it's such a good soundtrack level mix. And it's very fun to have this momentum taken away from you. You think it's going to make it harder, but in a lot of ways it doesn't.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
And there's a part in this level, which I love, that every time I played, I've instinctively done where I start racing the other way around the track to make things come at me. And it's just really, really satisfying when I'm big enough to just turn the other way.
And just suck them all up. Like they've been like bouncing you forward for the whole level. And then you turn around and absorb them.
It's really, really good. Perfect level. What's one that you maybe did not enjoy as much?
I think the one that I disliked the most was the fire level. I kept going out. You have to roll around. In this one, your Katamari's on fire, and you have to roll around and pick up things to stay lit. And if you don't pick up things fast enough, your Katamari goes out. And also, there are a lot of bridges, and if you fall in the water, your Katamari goes out. So you have to keep that lit at all times. And I would have times where I would end up rolling up a bunch of stuff, but going in a straight line. And then when I had to come back, I would go out.
Well, you have to keep rolling things up too. You'll go out not just from water or cold objects. You'll go out just from not rolling something up for a little bit. So you are using your fuel. Like if you do a line, like you've used up that line.
And then you don't get to, there's nothing to keep you burning as you go back.
It's also, there are a couple of counterintuitive things in this. I don't know about the science behind this, but you can pick up fire extinguishers in this and burn them. I didn't know that. I avoided them, but I saw that in the speed run of this.
Yeah. And then you eventually go up a little like hill and you go up around, getting bigger and bigger when you go up. And then there's like a bonfire thing in the middle. Mm-hmm. That you're supposed to roll into, and then it lights on fire and the level is done. Mm-hmm. And my second time doing it for the alternate run, because each level has two ways you can do it. Mm-hmm. My second time, I could not get that thing to light on fire.
You need to have a certain amount. It's difficult. You have to be bigger than it.
I could not get there. And it was very frustrating and not in a fun way.
The game has every, like, you can beat the game generally if you do well enough on going through the levels once, but then they will ask you to come back and do them, and it's harder.
Yeah.
This is on top of the challenge levels, which we'll talk about in a moment with the Royal Reverie through this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you want to, you can do hard mode versions of these, which to me, like, I'm not in this for rigor. I'm not trying to play a hard mode version of this. My least favorite episode, level in this is the cloud level, because I feel like it's straight up pretty broken. You can just roll through clouds. I'm clearly bigger than this, but I'm not picking it up.
I actually really like that level. I found the first section a little confusing because normally the viewpoint of the Katamari is you're above it looking down and rolling things up. And in this one, you're below it looking up.
Another classic Katamari upskirt.
So that was a little confusing at first, but I found that if I went out and rolled up all the definitely very small clouds, eventually I got so big that I could just bulldoze over everything, which was very satisfying.
That's why you eventually did to beat it. I just felt like it was harder to sight read. Like I had to go to a place.
It's really confusing.
There are also ones of these that don't do that much concept-wise, but I think are beautiful. The Firefly one I think about a lot, where the only thing, you can roll up anything, but fireflies are basically everywhere, and rolling them up to get to be a big enough light source. And they're just kind of ambiently floating through the sky. And like one, it's nice to remember the mid-2000s when we had fireflies before, you know.
Sure, yeah. You know,
it's very sad. What a miraculous little creature that we decided we didn't need anymore. But also it's just pretty.
Like, it's really lovely. And they make a really nice sound when you roll them up. Like it's almost a little jingle with like a inside of it, that it really sounds nice because you roll up like giant groups of them all at once over and over again.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's very good.
And it makes like a really pleasant sound.
If you beat all the levels in this, there's a bonus level of this. I didn't get it this time, but when I first played this on PS2, I did, which is to roll up a 1 million roses. They have a level that is everything's covered in roses, and roses respawn.
I didn't play that one.
It's kind of like the endless mode. A million's a lot. Like you can stop it and pause it and leave and come back and keep your total and stuff. It's kind of to turn it into a meditative toy.
Yeah.
That you can have. Because gamers are degenerate monsters, they figured out ways to arrange their controller with rubber bands. They can just leave the game on so they can get the million roses without actually having to do
it.
Because they want the number without having the meditative experience. I don't want all of that relaxation. Just give me the fucking achievement. I'm a gamer.
I think if I could, this wouldn't work as a level because it's not a game. But what I want is no timer and no size limit. Just let me roll up everything.
Eventually, it would run out of things it could do.
I know, and that would be the end.
Yeah, like, kill screen. Yeah, I would like that too. There should definitely be a free
all
mode.
I want.
Yeah, I would love that.
Just let me get all the things.
And let me start as small as I can start.
Yes. Yeah, like, start me in the smallest get big room and let me go out and eventually go into the big, big one. And just let me roll up every single thing.
Yeah, it's it can be 50 minutes. That's okay. I just want this complete Katamari experience and make the soundtrack, maybe shift through the whole soundtrack.
Oh, like, that would be great.
Have that be a way to listen to the OST.
Yeah.
It's worth noting, we're not going to talk about it very much, but the Switch version has something called the Royal Reverie. It's advertised like, oh, you get We Love Katamari plus Royal Reverie, and you're like, cool, new Katamari. It's five super hard challenge levels that are mirrored, horizontally to kind of throw you off. It sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks.
They're okay.
Like, it's more Katamari, but it's not, to me, it's not meaningfully more Katamari.
No. You know? The big difference is, quote unquote, story-wise, instead of being the prince told to do things by the king, you're now the king is a baby and your father, the emperor, is telling you to do things.
They tie into the story.
Yeah. Cycle of violence.
The story is weirdly about the cycle of violence. So we're kind of going to wrap up here on the story. The story, you know, the experience of this is this kind of slow burn where you joke, you know, and you look and you see very nice music and you kind of laugh at things. Sometimes because of the absurdity, you're also laughing at writing. The story writing, this is very important. And even though it's about the cycle of violence, it's very funny. The king of all cosmos, who I haven't noticed, is a fabulous bitch. Mm-hmm. I think it's the only way to describe him. He's constantly new boot goofing. He discovers, like in the first one, he kind of went on a bender and knocked all the stars out of the sky. And we have to roll up inanimate objects and sometimes humans to put the stars back. And in the second one, everyone was like, remember when you did that? We love you.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. Can you do this? And he does it. People, you walk up, you talk to a human, you bring them to the king. And the king kind of muses about what the thing is like.
Yeah, when you arrive, he's having his own conversation with no one. Like, yes. He would be speaking out loud about this thing, regardless of whether or not anyone showed up.
He is one of the most solipsistic creatures in fiction.
Yeah.
Like, if he, we are all a dream that he is having, mm-hmm. according to him. And they're just very funny. Like, he'll just be like, fireflies, tiny glowing bugs, never cared for them, you know, just kind of be musing about it. And then somebody from Earth would be like, you know, King, you're so magnificent. And he'll go ... magnificent ... Every time this happened, it made me laugh. I love it every single time. You're so sensual, King. Sensual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just then, repeating, of course, the compliment to himself.
He decides to do whatever it is they're asking about.
Yes.
And then he completely changes his position every time and makes it seem like it was his idea from the start.
Yes, when we get to the end of the level, like, when this is on an individual level, other than the explicit cutscene story, he will tell you you did a bad job. The person who requested it will tell you you did a bad job. But then the person who requested it will offer the Katamari to the king, and the king will be into it because mm-hmm. he's getting a gift. He likes present.
If you do fail a level, it's actually kind of fantastic. Like, the haptics on it are so great.
Yeah.
Like, if you fail a level, the whole screen goes black, and then you just see the king silhouetted lit from behind, and he yells at you, and lasers come out of his eyes.
It's very abusive.
Like, when the laser and the prince, like, shakes and cries while it's happening, and the lasers hit you, and it, like, rattles every time they hit you.
And you can control yourself, but it's not a game you can win. You can dodge a couple of them, but they will hit you. And he gives you another chance, but it definitely comes from an era of, like, Homer strangling Bart as a thing. That kind of harshness plus something I have here in the notes I realized during this is a game I know I'm bad at because the game is constantly telling me I'm bad at it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing with a certain stripe of video game that I really like. This happened in Sayonara Wild Hearts, which you covered. Did you ever play that? I think you would like that game.
No, I didn't play it, but it's sounded pretty neat from the episode.
I think you'd like it. And then also Rhythm Heaven, that franchise, which is my favorite Nintendo franchise, also tells you when you're bad. Like, mm-hmm. pretty, to just kind of pass, it has three levels of like great, and then failure, and then like there's a meh, okay, and it plays like the most disappointed music that's ever been. This game is constantly telling you that it's disappointed in you, and one of the things I think about with Katamari is that there, I know that there are gamer demographics, probably the same demographic that ties rubber bands to their controllers to get the Million Roses achievement or whatever, that does not like a game telling you you did a bad job. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, I talk to people on our Slack and Discord and stuff who like being told like bad job, like will actually get to their psyche. And this game is relentless about it.
It's very funny because the first time it feels like it comes out of nowhere, like you get to where they told you to be. And during the level, if you get past the goal with more time left, like the king comes out and he's like, did I ask for this?
Did I ask for 5 meters? That's not so good.
That's not so good. Make it bigger. And then unless you meaningfully surpass the goal that they set for you, the king and the little human are both like,
it's okay.
This is fine, I guess.
I thought it'd be bigger. Like, yeah, and it's a great joke.
The people give it to the king because they're like, I don't want this.
Well, also, what would you do with it? It's a fucking planet.
Like, that is just true. Like,
if I got the prince to roll me up a planet, I mean, like, hey, free real estate, I guess. I don't know what we would do with it.
I don't know. Here's a ball full of, like, staplers and cats.
Yeah, it's mostly stationary. This seems kind of stationary-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck. I guess we'd recycle it.
I guess.
As a marriage, as a family, we'd have to figure out what to do with it. So I love that joke of it just being mean to you. That joke just works on me in video games.
Something that I thought was a really cute little addition because, you know, you're playing as this character, the prince, and you get nothing but disappointment from everyone all the time. And you can feel like, oh, bad for your character. Mm-hmm. But when he's rolling stuff up and doing a good job, like little sparkles come out around him and then like hearts and rainbows, like he has a really cute animation of like loving rolling things up. Like, don't get it twisted. He loves doing this.
He's very happy. It's hard to understand the prince's level of sentience, you know, and level of agency is very low, but I think it's just because he's under the king's fabulous boot.
Well, how old do you think the prince is? Is he a baby? Because he's so much smaller than the king.
It was an exceedingly easy birth.
Yeah.
She probably did it without even knowing, like those characters in the MTV reality show.
It's who were like pregnant
without knowing it.
A kangaroo, like a marsupial, where the baby's so tiny it like crawls out. The prince needs a pouch to go into to continue to grow.
They didn't allow him, so he stayed stunted.
Yeah.
Like this, because some of the cousins are bigger. And some of the cousins get closer to like adolescent size, whatever race this is.
When we see the king in the cutscenes, like as a teenager, he's bigger. Like he's like proportionately teenage child to human adult size to his father. So
the prince couldn't even be a baby. Like babies don't even come out that small proportionally. He's like a fetus.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's like lemon sweets. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's got lemon sweet size. We do get to see the king. You brought that up. That is the kind of narrative through line to this. And we talk about the cycle of violence. That's what this is. It's really weird and very funny. So you, in between levels, you get these little pantomimes. And we were abused by the king the entire time. So we get to see his dad, the emperor, who also abused him, but he did it by pushing him too hard into being a boxer. There's boxing on wherever they're from.
Where are they from?
I don't know.
What planet is this?
All cosmos. They are
from
all cosmos.
They go to the zoo at one point? Like, yes. He takes his girl to a date. He meets a woman, and then they go to the zoo?
How big is that zoo? It's, like, exceedingly hard to understand. And in one of the funnier jokes about this, because his dad is such a shit, he turns into, like, a Japanese punk. He gets a pompadour and starts getting into street fights, like Kunio-kun, meets his lady. Fights back against his dad. And then at one point, his dad, he got a trophy for being number two at boxing. And his dad threw it into the river, or he threw it into the river because his dad told him how disappointed he was because it's Katamari. And his dad fished it out of the river. So on his dad's deathbed, he sees the trophy and realizes his dad was just pushing him.
Does and then
he has a baby, and that's why they abuse the prince.
Does he kill his dad? Like, they get in a fight, and he pushes his dad over, and then I feel like the next scene is his dad in bed.
On the bed, yeah.
Like, someday will the prince grow to enormous size and
kill the king?
Yeah.
If this series continued on a traditional video game route, we would 100% have that. I would love to roll up the king. Can you imagine the moment of triumph that would happen? Like,
that would be great.
There's a Rory Blank comic about Bart giving birth to Homer and Homer being like, aren't you going to strangle me? And Bart being like, father and son are the same now. The cycle of violence ends. That's really disturbing. It makes me think of that. The series moves too slow for that. It does show the dad or the emperor on his deathbed basically after that, but we don't know how much time has passed. So if you put him directly on his ass there. It's not exactly clear if the king punches the emperor and that's what directly leads into the deathbed, because we don't know how much time has passed. But it definitely looks like that. It couldn't have helped.
That's definitely the next scene that happens. So if he fell ill or something in between, they don't show that. Yeah.
It would have been funny if they did. He just starts coughing and falling down and stuff. They're weirdly dark.
They're also... we briefly touched on this, but what are they? Like, are the things their heads? Like, you know, they have like a pill-shaped head.
Yeah.
But they also have hair. So is that like a thing that they wear, or is that just part of their body?
It looks a lot to me like a headdress of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, though. And I don't think we'll ever actually find out.
It never comes up. Like, they never explain anything, which I kind of love.
There are no anatomically correct Katamari, all cosmos royal family people.
Yeah.
And we'll never get that lore. That'd be another thing if this series was more successful. There'd be like a lot of side stories and like Katamari brotherhood about, I don't know, the war in the Middle East, and it's a metaphor for fatherhood or some shit. I'm glad that has not happened.
Me too.
Basically all I got to say on this, before we move on, I have a final question for you, but do you have anything else you want to mention about, We Love Katamari before we move on?
No, I don't think so. It was really fun. I would say anyone who has any inkling who hasn't done it should play it, because it's a really good time.
I'm going to say this is the, if you think you're only going to play one of them, this is the one to play.
For sure.
I like it. There's more variety in the first one. It's just kind of better than the first one. And the first one will be there if you want it. You know, different environments, different songs. It's still fun to play the first one, but going back to this one or going back from this one won't hurt you, I think. My question is, real life, we're in our house. We have this house. We're married, all this stuff. We go outside and there is a Katamari. Rolling down the street, not of pick us up size yet, but not that far, you know, from it. Like, could easily grab Pocket and Jessica, could probably grab some of those neighbor kids.
We can't have that.
What do we do? What do you do?
Well, you don't attack the ball.
Oh, okay.
Is the thing. You go for the prince. You sneak up behind him.
And roll him up.
Yeah, and push him into it.
Yeah, oh,
and then
shit.
We become the prince. Yes.
And then we're the prince. Well, but then we don't know. Then a timer appears in our eye. And then the king hits us lightning if we don't do a good enough job destroying Southeast Portland.
I guess that's true. I was going to say, then we humbly offer it to the king and hope that he leaves. But yeah, maybe not. Maybe we get lasered.
But he always ends up okay after it.
That's true.
I think it'd be okay. He likes it so much. And, like, he gets shot at by cops, but they can't hurt him.
The bonus, there's a bonus level on this one where a comet is coming and you have to roll up all the countries.
Yeah, the final level.
And you have to roll them up by country size. And then at the end, like, the king and the human that initiates this, they're both like, is this better? Is Earth safe? Did we do a good job? Oh, well.
Yeah, it's very weirdly existential to that. This does question whether humanity is good or not.
Mm-hmm.
I would also love a post-2016 Katamari that came out that was like, you're rolling things up and everyone has the, instead of having the like, oh, that feels good, I'm disappointed reaction, they just have the apathy that I feel like most people who I know would have about being rolled up.
They're like, well,
like, oh, fine.
This is happening, I guess.
My love, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. And I hope everyone else enjoyed it too.
I hope so too. Your podcast, one more time, in case anyone wants to check out your work, your acting work on podcasts.
Oh yeah, sure. It is called Lady Luna's Spice Shop. And I believe it's available wherever podcasts are.
Yes. Yeah. Check it out. You used to have a Patreon.
No idea if that Patreon is still active. I think we never shut it down.
If you want to pay my rent in a very indirect way, mm-hmm. my mortgage in a very indirect way.
If you want to hear my other co-stars who did that show with me just yammering about all kinds of random stuff, you can maybe join that Patreon.
Yeah, get bonus episodes.
They would be so surprised if people joined the Patreon after the show's been over for like 2 years. Do it. Everyone, please do it. It would be very Fireball's funny. Bump,
legendary. I appreciate you. I appreciate you being on the show. I'm sure Kay appreciates it as well. I hope the audience liked it. If you're listening to this, we appreciate you. We understand this is a little bit of a different episode. As we mentioned, we're going to do these from time to time as needs be. There's a couple episodes Kay has lined up without me that I'm very excited to not be on. They're games I don't want to talk about. So I'm excited about that. If you're hearing this, if you'd like to hear more episodes of the show and a bunch of other bonus shows, entire other programs, you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And there you can find our premium episodes. At the end of every month, we do one of those. For this month, it's going to be Resident Evil Requiem, which also has Liv content because Liv is watching me play it.
I'm so excited to listen to you talk about Resident Evil Requiem. It's been so fun watching you play.
It's been really fun to play it with you as a thing. No, I say live content. You're not on the episode.
No, I'm not going to be there. I just...
You're doing a good job punching up my jokes as I play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you always do. And then, you can listen to all of our bonus episodes if you're a patron at $5 a month. If you have anything to say about Katamari, we love Katamari, you can write into duckfeed.tv/contact by the 15th. The deadline is always the 15th, and we might read your response on our dispatch episode. Please keep your response specific and brief, we'd love to do so. What else? You can leave us ratings, reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, anywhere you find podcasts. You can talk about us on message boards, tell your friends. If you are on our Patreon, you can join our Discord and talk about what have you there. Rip roaring conversation today about the Game of Thrones books that will never continue, of course. and the hot topic of whether the fourth and fifth one are bad or merely the fifth one are bad. You can join our Reddit as well, where I'm putting a little discussion prompts up. We'd appreciate that. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. Big thanks to Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
Big thanks to Gwen. We love Gwen. Gwen has, in this very office where I'm at, Gwen and her band have slept. We've had Gwen over. Gwen's great. Liv, my darling, until next time, what should people watch out for?
Katamaris.
That's pretty good. I didn't warn you this was going to come up, but that is the obvious answer. But
yeah.
No shade. That is what also the obvious thing to worry about.